Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Fraser Nelson. So we are back to another week of Brexit, even though there's not that much in the way of house business. However, we do have a new group. Downing Street have invited leading Brexiteers such as Steve Baker to a working group to look at technological solutions to the Irish border. James, what does this mean? Are we moving towards a backstop breakthrough?
I think this is Downing Street trying to keep everybody together. On Sunday morning, Steve Baker sent out a rather angry-sounding tweet saying there's trouble ahead, suggesting that the proposals that Theresa May were outlining in the Sunday Telegraph about the changes she would seek to the backstop were not enough. That, you know, that for him it is the Malthouse Compromise or nothing. He is uncompromising about the Malthouse Compromise. And I think this alternative arrangements working group, which the important thing is they'll have kind of full access to the civil service, is meant to show that Downing Street is serious about it and is making a good faith effort to see whether it can work or not. I would, though, point you to Jacob Rees-Mogg's Sun on Sunday article, which I think is quite interesting and significant, because it shows that not all people in the ERG think as Steve Baker does. Because he says in that piece, he kind of basically warns that if there was to be no deal, there'd be a real danger that Brexit would either be delayed or wouldn't happen at all. And I mean, this is what we're going to see play out over the next few weeks is, you know, there'll be those people who say it's a Malthouse Compromise or nothing. And there'll be other people who say, look, let's try and get as much as we can. But let's also be aware that the parliamentary arithmetic means that this House of Commons is realistically not going to let the UK leave without a deal.
Now, Fraser, the tweet that James mentions is Steve Baker at the weekend suggesting he was unhappy with Theresa May's suggestion that something like a codicil, a side agreement, could be used to fix the backstop. And this was quickly seized upon by both Labour MPs, who tweeted saying Theresa May should have known better than to ever trust the Brexiteers to compromise, and also the EU, where one of the lead negotiators, Sabine Wayand, tweeting that this showed that the backstop was perhaps not even the main problem. Even if you granted a concession, it wouldn't be enough. Are we seeing what seemed like unity last week begin to collapse?
Well, we might be seeing that, or Steve Baker might think he's being helpful. If he's saying a codicil is not enough, and she comes back with a codicil, he might then be seen to compromise with her, and that would be a great gesture on his part. When, you know, it's funny that the jargon that we start using here, by codicil, what if she were to come back with a one-sentence addendum to the withdrawal agreement, I think that would pass Parliament. And that would simply say that this backstop agreement, if it were used, could be terminated by either party within 6 months' notice. In other words, at that point, there'd be a fundamental change in what the EU are proposing. It would stop becoming something that could trap Britain, that's Parliament's concern, and instead become a standard international treaty. Everyone you can think of, every trade deal, EU membership, NATO membership, everything allows every signatory to break from the agreement if they want. Now, what if Theresa May were to come back with that? Then I don't think the ERG or any of the Tory Brexiteers could realistically complain. Sure, they wouldn't have their perfect agreement. Nobody has. Not the EU doesn't. Nobody else does. But you could have something that could be refined in future. And at that point, I think Steve Baker would probably struggle to take that many people with him. But then again, if this is negotiation, you ought to be demanding the hardest possible outcome, and as I imagine, he is. And there has been a lot of optimism on Michel Barnier, who a couple of weeks ago admitted that you can have technological solutions to the Northern Ireland border. And there are many of these. It's just simply untrue to say that there aren't these things. I've been across the Sweden-Norway border several times, and you don't notice a thing in the vast majority of crossings, because technology makes it so. So of course there are more solutions which you can find with goodwill, but that is the commodity which at the moment is in short supply.
Now, James, we've discussed previously on this podcast how Number 10 do think that they're going to need some Labour votes to get this deal over the line, because there are a chunk of Eurosceptic MPs in the European Research Group who are not going to vote for this deal, no matter what she brings back, even if they voted for the Brady Amendment. Would you say that Steve Baker is in that group that Number 10 don't think will ultimately vote for what they are negotiating?
I think whether Steve Baker is in that group or not is an interesting question. I think he is certainly, if that group is of any size, you know, if that group is more than 20, I think he probably will be. I think if it's smaller than 20, he won't necessarily be. I mean, we are getting deep into kind of criminology of the ERG here. You know, I think that you saw from the people who voted wouldn't vote for the Brady Amendment, so Redwood, Chope, Anne-Marie Morris, those are the people who are definitely voting against whatever May comes back with. I don't think Steve Baker is necessarily in that camp, but I think the bar to getting his support is higher than it is for the vast majority of people. I was talking to kind of one leading member of the ERG this morning, and they were basically saying that, a la Fraser, they would be perfectly happy with either a time limit or a unilateral mechanism, you know, someone who sits on the steering group of the ERG.
And so, I think, by the way, Dominic Raab, in my opinion, is a more accurate barometer of this. I mean, sure, Steve Baker will be saying things, but how many people can he take with him? The ERG have trouble counting, as we found out when they were doing their abortive attempt against Theresa May. So there are, you know, it's difficult to work out, of course, where is the centre of Tory backbench gravity on this, but I think James is right.
I think it's also just on the border technology, it's worth noting one thing. Look, there are checks and delays at the Sweden-Norway border.
On some crossings.
But on big commercial crossings, etc. I think that it is worth bearing in mind that if you change the current border arrangements, right, you actually have a chance to be kind of first in class in technology because you can actually use all the new stuff. And it is also worth being realistic about this, which is even at the height of the Troubles, when, you know, there were soldiers posted to the border was never closed. It is the nature of the crossing, the nature of the way the Irish border works. Means, so, you know, you are going to need some technological flexibility, almost kind of come what may. I think on the Labour MPs front, the thing that when talking to people in Number 10 and in government, they are most excited about is that they think that the votes last week show that there was a pool of Labour MPs prepared to back a Brexit deal of about 30 or so. What is kind of giving them real hope at the moment is that they feel that pool is growing rather than shrinking. And they feel that pool is self-reinforcing. So they are bolstering each other, and that gives them a better chance of defeating the Cooper Amendment when it comes back on Valentine's Day.
I should probably add here that a few weeks ago at The Spectator, we had a lunch for a whole bunch of people who are involved in border technology to discuss this. And if anybody's interested, if you Google Brexit Britain needs 21st century borders, that was the write-up of the discussion there, where there were lots of people, you know, from the border agency, from various companies involved in this, who were just saying what the market's got right now. And the market has got a lot. It would cost a lot to upgrade. But if you're starting from scratch, you really could avail yourself of technology that's, you know, you can get airports now where they don't require passports, if they can just take a fingerprint. I mean, that it wouldn't be required in Northern Ireland. But there are so many ways you can now move between a border frictionlessly.
Now, finally, the other piece of news that's dominating the headlines is plans from Nissan. They've scrapped plans to build the new X-Trail SUV in Britain and will produce it solely in Japan. Now, when the news was announced and confirmed this weekend, you quite quickly had people leaning towards a People's Vote campaign, saying that this was because of Brexit. On the other side, you had Brexiteers saying it has nothing to do with Brexit. Fraser, what is the truth?
Well, it's funny, if you pick up a newspaper today in Britain, then you can pretty much tell what the newspaper thinks of Brexit by how much prominence it's given to the Nissan story. Some of them have got great on the front page, you know, Brexit to blame for Nissan doing it. The Daily Telegraph's got a tiny little mention of it. I think the Telegraph is right for the following reasons. That if you look at what Nissan is doing in Sunderland, it's an incredibly efficient factory. Not so long ago, that factory was producing more cars than the whole of Italy, for example. Now, they did a deal with the government after Brexit, where the government, unwisely in my view, gave them 60 million quid as a sweetener. I don't think you should ever bribe companies, but the government did. But that deal was not just for the X-Trail. It was for the Qashqai car, it was for the Duke, and also this, at the time, experimental X-Trail diesel car. Now, so in other words, it was a third part of the agreement, and it didn't involve that many jobs. What Nissan is now doing is working out that the demand for these diesel engines worldwide is going to be a lot less than it had thought 2 years ago. That's because the car industry is changing fundamentally. And also, let's not forget, it's now got a free trade deal with the EU, so it can export things to the EU without the 10% tariff it used to have. So things do change, and it's not saying it's going to go and make its cars in Paris or somewhere like that. If that had happened, we might be seeing a Brexit effect. What you are seeing is Nissan quite rightly adjusting its plans to adjust for the cold wind blowing through a lot of the diesel car manufacturing sector. But because we're into the Brexit crazy zone, no story like this is going to be treated on its own merits. It's either going to show that Brexit is a complete disaster, that no deal is spooking the country, or people are going to say it's nothing to do with Brexit at all. I'm not saying Brexit will have been a factor. They said it is. I can completely believe that. But not, I don't think, the deciding factor.
I think one of the things we're going to have to do is we're going to have to become a bit more sophisticated. We're going to have to become suspicious of monocausal explanations. Things are rarely caused by one thing. I think it is completely fair enough to say that Brexit was probably not helpful. But I think, as Fraser says, the global turn against diesel cars, the concerns that they're actually, you know, more polluting than people thought, and all those things, they are probably a bigger factor. That doesn't mean that Brexit... But it's equally wrong to say that Brexit is not involved at all, as to say that it is the sole reason. But these things are kind of complex mixtures of factors.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. And I'm afraid we no longer have a Waitrose bargain offer to flog to you. But we do have a new shiny Aspinall Spectator branded wallet worth £60. If you'd like to subscribe and claim that, you just need to go for £12 for 12 issues. Just go to spectator.co.uk/subscription.